Well, hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Corinth in Your Car. I have a feeling that today is going to be a really fun one. I've got with me Josh and Adam, as usual, and my name is Luke. We're super glad to be here and glad that you are with us. Let's jump into a little bit of check-in, and then we will get into some fun conversation today. First things first, we are a week and a day, as people listen, away from Easter Sunday. So let's just talk about that. Easter review. What was fun for you guys about Easter, both in regards to church life and in regards to family life?
Church life was good. I think we had our biggest, right, Adam? I think our biggest Easter ever. So that's fun.
Yeah, as far just as I know.
The numerical impact, but also just seeing people take family photos, hearing the call and response of He is risen indeed. Mm-hmm. I loved the thief on the cross, just a new take on the hope. It's not a resurrection story, but it sort of is, because sure. There's a guy who seems hopeless, and yet he was restored hope. And so, yeah, just a lot of fun all around on that day. The food was good, too. The smoked ham was, and still is, being eaten.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very good.
Cool.
How long do you eat ham, leftover ham?
Oh, I mean, it's so salty. I feel like you could eat it for a month.
You think?
Yeah.
That's a good thought.
It keeps pretty well.
It keeps pretty well.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it was a great Sunday and enjoyed all of it. And so I will echo Josh's echoes or his thoughts. But yeah, we had a great small little dinner and just a good day and just ready to keep moving.
Yeah. Love it. I agree with all of it. Great at church, great with family. What a day to be alive.
Yeah.
Along the history of resurrection, of course, the resurrection ushers in the kingdom of God. One of many things that ushers in the kingdom of God, I guess you could say. But for us, Easter this year ushered in spring break. So what's been a highlight for spring break? I know, Adam, you talk about and make the joke that it doesn't apply to you at all anymore because you don't have kids. But Josh, maybe more so for you. So what's been some highlights from spring break?
Oh, man, it's been a really good week. So we didn't go anywhere on a vacation or anything like that, but we had a great time here. We disc golfed. We ate for $14 at Sam's Club.
Nice.
We bought a new vacuum, went to the botanical gardens, played. I already said disc golf. Yeah. You beat me, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's in proper order now. I think the last time we played was like 4 years ago, and yeah. I got lucky somehow. So it has been righted. The correct winner is in place.
Universe is in balance.
It's in balance. And last night we went to a hockey game, the Gladiators. They won 4-0.
Nice.
And each one of my children walked out with a puck.
Nice.
So they just loved it. Rosalie can't wait to show it at school, show and tell. And she was bouncing the entire night in her seat. I don't know why Rosalie came out of her.
I was
crazy for hockey.
I was about to say, I would expect all out of all of your children, it to be the other two before her.
That oh, no, not Naya. She was like, she in fact said, I really wanted to like hockey, but I don't. It's so funny.
That is hilarious.
And then, of course, Dominic has no clue what's going on in life sometimes. He's an 8-year-old boy, so it's hilarious. We're walking out of the stadium last night, and he just goes, Mommy, what about our stuff? Like, that was the whole sentence. She goes, what do you mean, what about our stuff? And he goes, the stuff that we put. Once again,
that's helpful.
No more help right there. The stuff that we put. So we finally found out he thought that when we went through security and put our little things in the bucket, that they didn't give it back to us, like our wallet and keys and phone. And he's like, you got to get your stuff back. We have it already, buddy.
That's funny.
So yeah, it's been a fun week. It's still not over.
Yeah.
And kids have been playing outside. So just,
Yeah.
Great week all around.
Good times. It was fun to get out on the disc golf course with Josh and Dominic. It won't be long before Dominic beats both of us, I think.
Well, he did hit the shot of the day.
He hit the shot of the day.
Yeah.
Throw in from 80 feet.
Nice.
And he legitimately beat both Luke and I on that hole.
Yep.
He got, what was it, 3? And we got 4?
Yeah, you got a par. We got a bogey.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was fun.
Thinking bogeys. It's the way of the world. I don't know. Spring break's been fun with students out of school and there being kind of a break in the regular rhythm of youth ministry programming.
I've taken the opportunity to play a little bit more disc golf, but also to dive into some topics that I've been wanting to dive into a little bit. So that's been fun.
Reading and listening, is that what you're getting at?
Reading and listening a lot more. So that leads to this next question. What is something you guys are reading or listening to right now?
I just re-picked up the latest Jack Reacher book.
Oh, fun. Right.
The Secret. So that's my read-to-go-to-sleep book. But then I've been reading and studying on Nehemiah. Also been doing a lot of reading and studying on end times and those kind of things.
So. No reason though.
No reason.
What prompted the Nehemiah?
It's another study I'm going to be leading.
Okay. So. Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Josh.
Yeah. I think I was sharing with you, there's a Spoken Gospel podcast. Spoken Gospel is all about just seeing Jesus through every page of scripture,
mm-hmm.
how it all applies. And so I recently listened to their episodes on Ezekiel, and man, what a book Ezekiel is in the Old Testament. You just, I think, finished reading it, right? So
yep.
It's kind of fun. We could geek out on, you know, I could tell you all the stuff that was fun for me to hear as a Bible geek, but I'll spare those details. Yeah. It was a fun listen.
Yeah.
It really was.
Right on. Yeah. I'm making my way through another book right now. One of the goals that I have is to read, something on marriage every year as a way to cherish my wife and grow and all that sort of stuff. So I'm reading Paul David Tripp's book on marriage right now. I think it's technically titled Marriage, Six Gospel Commitments Every Couple Needs to Make. It's a long title, but he walks through a lot of stuff. It's been a really revealing and helpful book.
In one of his book introductions, I can't remember which book it was, but I read this in a Paul David Tripp introduction. He said, I have sometimes joked that I haven't written like 30 books or however many he has. He's like, I've just written one book with a new title every year because it's all about the gospel.
Well, yeah.
Because his parenting book is like 12 gospel principles, and New Morning Mercies, it's how does the gospel apply every mm-hmm. single day, and marriage, how does the gospel, which is
right.
not a bad theme not to go back theme. To, really.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So that's been a fun one. What is also starting to be pretty fun is our new series.
Uh-huh.
It's called... Yeah. It's the end of the world.
Yeah, that question mark's doing a lot of work.
Yeah,
there.
Like uh-huh. It changes the whole way.
Yeah,
I'm reminded of
carrying a lot of weight.
I'm gonna throw this movie out here, Anchorman.
Yeah,
you've got Ron will read anything on the prompter, and uh-huh. so the one time in the broadcast where they sneak the question mark with his line, he's like, "I'm Ron Burgundy." I don't know. He'll read everything. So it's the end of the world, question mark?
Yep.
So that's the conversation we're going to start today. But let's start with a little bit more fun. I don't think that the zombie apocalypse is a realistic view held by any of us for end times. But let's just play with it. If it were to happen, what would your strategy be?
What would my strategy
be? Yeah, what would your strategy be for the zombie apocalypse that won't happen?
Oh, I don't know, man. It would probably, I don't know. What is a strategy for a zombie apocalypse?
You don't think about this?
You
can't kill someone that's already dead, right?
I don't know.
I would just run.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would run.
Run?
Yeah.
Run?
Go to Montana.
Yeah.
Montana. Try to get up high and on a mountain.
I'll just go where there is nobody and just get out there. And
yeah.
Because,
live in
well, yeah, go where there's nobody, because don't zombies want to eat human flesh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you just run far away.
Like run far away.
Forrest okay. Gump.
I think that there have been times where I have, with my friends, parsed out our strategy for getting into a community and fighting our way off and surviving as a species and all that sort of stuff. But there's also times where I'm just like, you know what? I just want to break into a Krispy Kreme and grab a box of a dozen donuts and just sit there and eat until I await my fate. You know, like...
Until
I just get eaten. So, I don't
wow.
know. There you go.
Secondhand donuts for the zombies.
Yeah. It makes them come after me quicker, I think. But the series, it's the end of the world. Adam, Josh, we can all kind of voice some thoughts here. But like, man, why this series? So it's the end of the world, talking about end times, the right, correct theological word or whatever is eschatology.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why? First off, why not?
Sure.
But then the other thing is it is even though it's not a topic that like we preach on regularly, like I don't know that I've ever done a series on this. I've addressed it and like, you know, you asked for it or frequently asked questions,
sure,
you know, kind of series. But even though it's never been something that we've really just like held out a lot, it is a biblical topic,
yeah,
and that the Bible is a prophetic book. It talks about this, you know, I referenced it in the sermon that, there are 260-ish chapters in the New Testament, and there are 300 references to the return of Christ.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm not great at math, but that's
more than one per chapter.
More than one per chapter if you average it out there. So it's a pretty prominent idea. And the idea is more so than like trying to predict exactly when it's going to happen, because everybody's batting zero whenever it comes to that.
Yeah.
But is more of to take scripture seriously whenever it says it could happen anytime, so keep watch, yeah, be alert, stay ready. And so really that's just going to be the entire gist of the series.
Sure. Josh, you have any thoughts to add on maybe why this series and what you might be excited about of just having the conversation?
I think another big why is just this can be scary for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Because depending on how you look at the end times, people are just scared. Maybe it's scared of an unknown.
Yeah.
Maybe it's scared of suffering or tribulation or some horrible things that are going to happen. And there's all these things we don't know, or we think we don't know. And I think part of the answer for us here at Corinth is to bring some answers that can help and can encourage and can dispel maybe some of the fear, mm-hmm, because we do serve an already victorious God.
Correct.
And so I think that's some of the why. Another one of the why is just we want to be helpful. And yeah, it's a question, mm-hmm, I think a lot of people are asking.
Yeah.
And so we want to.
Yeah, it actually showed up in that survey, which I thought was funny. The Easter survey we, okay, did. You know, it was like one of the
Top responses.
I think it was one of the top five, if, okay, I remember right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Right on. Yeah. And I think, Josh, what you're pointing out is really great, because what God has revealed in his word about end times was never meant to make those who follow him scared.
No.
But it was actually intended to do the opposite. What God revealed about end times in his word is actually supposed to fill a Christian with hope. Because the only thing that we really do know is that Jesus wins in the end. And that's mm-hmm, important. So I'm excited about this conversation. Let's ask this question. Who are some of the voices that have guided you in this topic over the years? That way we've got some names thrown out for some of our people to listen to, in addition to just a couple of guys sitting around a table at Corinth as well. So who are some of the voices that have helped you in this topic?
So for me, probably the foundational one would be Josh's dad.
Okay.
I, from the time I was in college 25 years ago or whatever, and hearing him talk about the topic, and then just reading a lot of stuff that he's written about it, listened to him on it, and he's probably the most foundational for me.
Okay.
And how I kind of view things.
Sure. Josh, is your own dad a voice, or are there additional ones that you've listened to as well?
I mean, yeah, for sure. It can't not be, because often when he would go on conferences or things, I would be there as little Josh along for the ride. So I've heard that through the years, but, you know, several people from Ozark as well, just going through school there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you'll mention probably, you know, Shane Wood, right, and yeah, some of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, the person that I've had real life conversations with about and listened to probably the most on the topic is Shane Wood, who I don't know that I agree 100% everything with him, but like a lot of the things that he suggests and offers, I have read one of Mark Moore's books. I think it's How to Dodge a Dragon. Is that his?
Super old. It's not even
super old.
It's, yeah, not even in print anymore.
So that one,
if you want to buy it, it's on Amazon, probably for like $40.
Yeah,
and when it's a little pamphlet, really.
Or if you don't want to buy it, I have a copy of it. You can borrow it.
I have some too. Yeah.
So, but then also read one of Proctor's little devotional books on it, mm-hmm, and all that sort of stuff. So some of the voices, yeah, all coming from kind of that that Ozark Circle. But yeah, so
I think I remember there's one called Revelations Rhapsody. That's a good, I think it's
yeah, that's Bob Lowry.
Bob Lowry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Robert Lowry. Bob Lowry.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Ooh. He was, and that's who Shane would have studied under at Lincoln.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's do this, and then we'll jump into a very quick recap and conversation of what happened yesterday, and then we'll get into some of the weeds a little bit. But let's before we jump in, just kind of lay the foundation. And what would you guys say to some of our people they need to know or recognize or consider before jumping into a conversation about end times?
Yeah, I think the two things are the things I mentioned in the message.
Okay,
this is not. So the essential truth is Jesus is coming back.
Right.
We all have to, but we should all agree on that.
Yeah.
That is the thing that matters more than anything. How, when, where, what, all those other kind of things are secondary matters. They're secondary issues. If not, I get to use the word tertiary.
One word.
They are not things that we should use as a club against other people.
Yeah.
It should not be something that we use as a club against ourselves.
Right. Like if you don't have the right belief, you somehow aren't getting into heaven, or you don't have the right faith. Yeah. Like
Yeah. If you disagree with me on how or all those other kind of things, I don't.
Yeah, big deal.
It doesn't matter.
See you in heaven.
Yeah. We'll see each other in heaven on that kind of thing. And so, but then it's also to not use as a club against somebody else of, uh-huh. I can't believe you believe this way, you're not really a Christian.
Right.
And so I think that's probably, and I think the other thing too that I didn't say on stage, because it would have come off way too snarky. So I'll just save it for the podcast, is that if you want to sit down and have a conversation where you break out all your charts and all those other kind of things and look like the guy from It's Always Sunny from Always Sunny with the tack board and all those other kind of things, like, see, this is why it's got to be this way. I'm not interested in having that conversation.
Right.
Because I don't care. I really don't. And it's really cool if you've spent all that kind of time and that stuff, but that's fine. I'm not interested.
Yeah, the illustration I think of is one that Chad Ragsdale in one of his real life theology books has given. I've passed this along in some Wednesday classes. Just you picture a bullseye, and the essential things we believe for, like, to be a Christian, to go to heaven, to have salvation. It's essentially small because the bullseye is the smallest part of that target. Right. So you have a few handful things that you have to believe to be a Christian. This is, I think, what he would call. Maybe an important,
right?
To think about,
yeah.
You know, but it's not essential as far as the belief, which dispensationalism,
which millennial view
right. you hold, and all this kind of stuff. So,
sure. Yeah, I love that. And the conversation in itself is not 100% essential. And so, therefore, be humble about it. Don't be arrogant about it.
Yeah.
And treat people who you disagree with respect, knowing that they're your Christian brother and sister as well.
Yeah, and, it comes back to, like, what kind of church we are.
Right.
We say in essentials, we're going to be unified.
Yep.
But in non-essentials, we have liberty.
Yeah, so the essential is Jesus is coming back.
Yeah. Right. And that's where you started yesterday.
Yeah.
That's the truth of week one. So essential truth, Jesus will return.
Yes.
You're asking the question. Will Jesus come back? The answer is
yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Adam, give us a quick recap of where you went yesterday, and we'll jump into the text that you went to here in a minute.
Yeah, really, that's what we're trying to do in this message, is just lay the foundation. He is coming back, and then start to ask the question, how does that affect the way that we live today? So if he's coming back, if it could be today, if it could be tomorrow, if it could be within my lifetime, how should that affect the way that I live, even if he doesn't come back in my lifetime, how now shall I live? And so that's really the whole point of the sermon, is just he is coming back, just to reassure he will return. So be ready, be prepared, be alert, don't lose hope. And, you know, if you knew that tomorrow was the day, what would you do differently today?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Love it. Josh, anything kind of stand out as you're scrolling through what will be preached? And this Sunday.
I mean, I feel like I'm just reiterating, just Jesus is going to come, so be ready. That seems to be the thing that rises to the top. Okay. And I guess what popped into my head is, no matter your belief on when Jesus will come back, it's closer now than ever.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. It's always closer now than ever.
Closer whenever we are done with this podcast than when we started this podcast.
Yeah. So the illustration I've heard before, which is pretty fun, is you think about growing up in school.
Yep.
And the substitute teacher is there, or the teacher, it doesn't matter. The teacher leaves the room and says, I have to go to the office to make copies. Usually what happens is right at the beginning of the teacher's absence, the class is pretty well behaved.
Yeah.
But the longer the teacher is away, the worse behaved they get. When it should be the opposite, right? Like, you know, at the beginning, if you were misbehaving, you should kind of clean up your behavior the longer the teacher is away, because, you know, they're closer than ever to coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And not that we just live our lives trying to clean up our behavior at the very end. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is, the longer Jesus is away, the closer he is at all times to coming back.
Yeah.
And so I think for me too, it's not just to put in fear, but it's for a Christian, this confronts me too and just challenges me. Like, am I actually hoping for that day?
Mm-hmm.
Am I praying every day, like, Jesus, come back? Like,
yeah.
Could this be the day? Am I hoping for that?
Right.
And so often I think we get distracted and forget that.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Love it. So for kind of the conversation today, I want to start with scripture. It's a pretty good idea, I think. And then discuss briefly this point that we've already been talking about, is that we know Jesus will come back. And then what we'll do after looking at those texts that you went to, Adam, yesterday, is we'll kind of wrap up talking about what we don't know, which is the when and the how and all that sort of stuff. So Matthew chapter 24 is where you took us. You read just a few of the passages in that whole chapter. But essentially, the disciples are asking a question. What is their question, and why are they asking it?
Yeah, they're asking in their brains one question. Jesus reveals that it's actually, I think that's my microphone.
It was somebody's microphone.
Yeah, it was mine.
Okay.
So we're good now.
We're good.
And so Jesus helps them see that it's actually two.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus has just predicted the destruction of Jerusalem. This is the last week. It's Tuesday. Before his crucifixion. And he's like, you see this beautiful temple? They're like, man, it's amazing. He's like, yeah, there's not going to be a stone left of it. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of disturbed by that question, as you would think. And so whenever they get Jesus aside to themselves, they're asking him, hey, when's that all going to happen? And when's the end of all time going to be? Because in their brain, it's the same thing.
Right.
That if the temple's destroyed, then it's just going to be the end of the world. And so Jesus spends that entire—it's actually 24 and 25—discussing the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD and then the end of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bailiwick. Is that the right way? It is a quagmire to walk through Matthew 24.
Yeah.
Because— it was your dad, Josh, that in just reading some of his, he said, you know, as you're reading Matthew 24, if it can apply to the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, then it should.
Yeah.
Because that's the primary question Jesus is answering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you get to verse 36, and that's whenever everything shifts to the end of time. Yet, all that being said, would it be strange if some of the things that Jesus is describing are going to happen at the fall of the temple are going to happen at the end of time as well?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it'd be a stretch.
It's not a stretch at all. And so that's why, I think it was Kyle Adelman was talking about how, whenever you read Matthew 24 is probably going to determine how you interpret Matthew 24. Meaning what's going on in the world at the time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because there are other times in history whenever it's like, oh, that's clearly just Jerusalem. That's all that is to it. But then there are other times in history it's like, oh, buddy, could that be happening right now?
Right.
So.
Yeah. But it is important to clarify, I think, where the disciples' minds are at. Because you even mm-hmm. have, is it Sermon on the Mount where Jesus says, truly, truly, I tell you, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away? Well, okay. is Jesus talking end times here, or is he talking about something else? And, you know, one of the debates that's up in the scholarly world is what Jesus may mean by heaven and earth. And there's a pretty common consensus that Jewish people would have nicknamed the temple heaven and earth because it is theologically their view of where heaven and earth intersect, because that's where the presence of God is.
Well, right? So, and in the temple period, it actually was the place where God and earth
Exactly. And so if, you know, Jesus is saying heaven and earth will pass away, is he talking end times? Is he talking 70 AD? Is it, you know, and it's the same conversation here in Matthew chapter 24, trying to weed out what is Jesus, when is Jesus talking about 70 AD? When is he talking about the end of all things? But the consensus, pretty much, you pointed out, is there seems to be a shift before verse 30. Is it 36?
Yeah, it's 36.
However.
Yeah, and however is actually, you know, the word but.
Right. And Mark chapter 13 kind of lays it out similarly, where it's this conversation, and then it's, but concerning this hour.
Yeah.
Basically, Jesus is saying, now I'll answer the question that you asked in the first place.
Yeah, and about, I don't know how, because I'm horrible at grammar. But in the construction of the sentence in Greek, where the word but is placed is done in the way so that it would be underlined, highlighted, italicized, bolded, you know, for them. So that's why you can kind of look at verse 36 and just go, okay, something's shifting right here. Everything before this may apply to the end of times, but... this, from this point on, surely does.
Right. And so in verse 36, you really get what I think is the main point that Jesus is making. No one knows the day or the hour when these things will happen. I don't even know. Like, only the Father knows at that, you know, at that point. And so that's kind of the point, is you don't know, but it's going to happen. And so love that you walked through that text, because it does reveal, once again, our whole point of the day. Jesus will return.
Yes.
The when and the how. Is where we get a little bit lost, but we know for sure Jesus will return. 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 through 4. Josh, why don't you read that one for us, and then we'll just talk about that one for a minute before we jump into the other stuff.
2 Peter 3:3-4. Most importantly, I want to remind you that in the last days, scoffers will come, mocking the truth and following their own desires. They will say, what happened to the promise of Jesus, or that Jesus is coming again? From before the times of our ancestors, everything has remained the same since the world was first created.
Cool. So one of the, what Shane Wood might call a semantic bomb, is that phrase called last days. Because it can sometimes be taken out of context, and people make it mean things that it doesn't necessarily mean. Adam, offer us some quick clarity. What is meant by the phrase last days here?
Yeah, in fact, I thought one of the questions that Shane asks is, that's really, really helpful, is are we asking the same question that the Bible is asking?
Yes.
And are we defining the word the same way as the Bible defines it? So whenever the Bible says last days, is it talking about those last 24-hour periods before Jesus comes back, or is it something else? Mm-hmm. And the short of it is that all seven times that phrase shows up in the New Testament, it is referring to the time in between the first coming and the second coming.
Yeah.
In fact, multiple times you'll read it and say, in these last days, in these last, I think that's Hebrews 1, if I remember right.
Right.
You know, in these last days, and so, which was written in what, 60 AD?
Yeah.
And the writer's like, these are the last days, because we're in between the time of Jesus' first appearing and his second.
Yeah.
So that's really what it all comes down to, is that is what the last days are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Peter is clarifying in this text, it sounds like, basically, don't pay attention to people who are trying to convince you that, Jesus isn't coming back. Why?
You all right?
Ooh.
I'm good.
You got a bottle of water. Right,
I don't
there,
know.
Dude.
I don't know what just happened. So Peter is clarifying, don't pay attention to people who are trying to convince you that Jesus isn't coming back. Why is he making sure that the audience he's writing to knows that this is an important thing not to pay attention to?
Well, I think that the driver of it is, and it's understandable, even though it may not be understandable at the same time, that people would be going it's been, I mean, when Peter's writing, it's been 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Dude ain't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have come back, if he was going to come back, he'd come back already by now, mm-hmm. you know. And here we are 2,000 years later, and, you know, there yeah. are the scoffers and the mockers that are still there. You really believe that a guy is going to return? And, you know, and so that's what Peter is trying to help them understand is like, there are going to be people who don't believe this is going to take place, but it's of utmost importance for us to remember it will take place. And we just don't know when.
Yeah. And so it's plain and simple. Jesus is coming back. Again, that's why we're talking through this text, because these are the things that we know. Jesus is coming back, and therefore that actually impacts how we live today.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a faithful follower of Jesus who recognizes Jesus is coming back, that does not mean that we can just, you know, live our life the way that we want to live our life. It does mean that we have to, in a lot of senses, be obedient to the demands of Jesus and the sovereignty of God and all that sort of stuff. So summary of yesterday, summary of what we've said so far is what we know for sure is Jesus is coming back. I think that we've been pretty clear about that one so far. But there are certain things that we don't know, and that is when or how. And yet, we spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. We debate it. We separate ourselves into different camps because of it. And quite frankly, I think we sometimes waste good kingdom energy on it. We don't know when. Let's start with that. But some people try to predict it. What are some theories that you've heard before in when?
I don't know about if this would fall underneath the theory camp. You know, we'll get into it. Just kind of depends on how you view things. But I do remember, I'm probably the only one at the table who remembers this.
Yeah, sure. I think I know what you're saying. Yeah.
In 1988. Uh-huh. Yeah. Josh was alive, but he probably does not remember.
98 reasons the world is ending in 1998.
Unfortunately, it was 88.
88. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there were 88 reasons why. And I remember like going to church that Sunday. Like I really do. And I can't remember if it was because there's like a blood moon on the Passover or something, you know, right. of that, uh-huh. of that nature. But I remember going to church that day. I was like 9 years old. It's terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just kind of, oh my gosh, we're going to be in church. And like, is Jesus coming back today?
Yeah.
And it didn't happen in 88. And so then the guy wrote a book the next year, like 89 reasons why, you know.
He's coming back this year instead. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody wrote a book in 1993. I can't remember who, but it was like 23 reasons why 1993 is the year Jesus is going to come back. And then wrote it again in 1994. It's always that pesky Roman calendar that gets them. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, you gotta, it depends on how you count the years, you know, on that.
Right.
So all kinds of theories, predictions.
Theories.
You know, you got the Left Behind series and mm-hmm. all those kind of things that are just like I read all those. I mean, they were
I
fun.
I did too, yeah.
The movies were horrible.
Yeah.
Well, you've even got like, this week, this podcast is coming out either the day of or a couple of days before the eclipse is happening again.
Yeah, solar eclipse is on Monday.
People are
freaking out because it's making an X across America, and and
the cities that it's going over.
There's seven cities named Nineveh in America that this eclipse is going.
Wow!
Yeah. So to freak out all our conspiracy theorists out there. Yeah, I forget which city it is that both eclipses are passing through, like where the X crosses. I guess we could look that up pretty quickly. But
right.
But yeah, there's all kinds of stuff out there. There's, Y2K for me and the 2000.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't remember how much of that was, is this going to be the end of the world
right.
as far as Jesus coming back? But I do remember that was my, you know, lifetime. I would have been 14 years old, 15 mm-hmm. years old, I guess 14.
Yeah. Well, even 2012 for some reason was another date year that was attached to.
Oh, because that was the Mayans.
Yes, because
right.
Well, so that day it was December 21st of 2012 because of the Mayan calendar, and my nephew Jackson was born on December 21st, 2012.
Okay. Nice.
So he's the end of the world apparently.
Yeah.
No, but I remember, Y2K, the year 2000, wondering if I was going to wake up and all the technology would, you know, and people got their bunkers and they got their food that would last for years, canned food and all that stuff. And There's always something that we are looking out for.
Sure. Okay. So here's the question. There have been some theories before. People have tried to figure out when. I'll ask a question kind of rooted in a little bit of skepticism about that. Why should we be watching out for people's predictions and maybe what's dangerous about even the process of trying to predict it?
I would say this. Eventually, somebody's probably going to be right. because there are so many predictions, you know, there will probably be some guy that's, you know, got a blog post somewhere that actually ends up predicting it right. Just, mm-hmm. But I think that to me, the danger is at least twofold. One, and this is going to go against our Left Behind books, that it can give you this false sense of, I don't need to do anything to live for the Lord until I see these things taking place.
Sure.
Okay.
There's a possibility of that. Sure.
There's a possibility of people doing that. In fact, I remember when I was in Bible college, we were doing prayer requests, and some guy's like, yeah, I need you to pray for a small group of my church because they're doing a Bible study using the Left Behind books and basically telling each other, yeah, until we see this kind of guy show up, we don't have to worry and those kind of things.
Sure.
And so,
create some passivity towards
it. It can create some passivity. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then the second thing that's twofold is it can be very easy to major in minors.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can waste energy on something that may not help us baptize more people,
yep.
may not help Absolutely. Us right. share the gospel with more people, you know, do those kind of things. And so that's really the main reason why it's not like a major point of emphasis here is because it's like, we believe Jesus is coming back. How he comes back, whenever he comes back, that's fine. We're going to work at baptizing people until he does. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Josh, what are some extra thoughts that you may add there about maybe some of the why should we be watching out for predictions and what could be dangerous about paying too much attention to the when Jesus returns?
I just echo what he said, just majoring in the minors of mm-hmm. The kingdom mission we have, you know, when train, send, doesn't necessarily include training on dispensational views.
Sure. Yeah.
It's training to be a disciple of Jesus on a daily basis. And what does that look like to share your faith with somebody else? And the message of hope is Jesus is alive and he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
The message of hope is not he's coming back in this specific time. It's hey, he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
He can affect you today. That's the message. And if we, like Adam said, major in the minors and preach the wrong message, mm-hmm. I think that it just misses the really impactful point we could make.
Yeah, so. Sure. I'll throw this one out here, if for no other reason than just for discussion and conversation. Shane Wood would throw in an additional danger, and that he is thinking all of these predictions that people are making, and therefore then getting wrong, is actually hurting our witness for people who are unbelievers. Mm-hmm. Who are looking at all of these Christians who are predicting the second coming of Jesus and getting it wrong, and then basically stacking up more evidence to say, well, you guys are consistently wrong about this one, the second coming. So what makes me trust that you could be right about the first one?
Sure.
And so there's kind of some witness that could potentially be damaged in unchristian thought for those who are seeing our predictions and we're getting them wrong again and again. So that's another one that is at least worth thinking about in regards to the prediction stuff. Now, so we don't know when is the whole point. We'll get into next week. Next week, the question that you're asking, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, is just, will there be signs?
Right.
And so the signs, depending on how we answer that question, yes or no, should theoretically help us, quote unquote, predict when a little bit easier. Maybe not, you know, exact day, hour, month, year, or all that sort of stuff, but maybe an idea of, oh, could be soon, you know, and all these different things. But the whole idea is we don't know when, we just know that it is happening. The other thing that we don't know is how, but there are lots of different theories on how. And so you've got, this word's been thrown out a little bit already, dispensational premillennialism, historic premillennialism, postmillennialism, amillennialism. You've got rapture and 7-year tribulation and 1,000-year reign and yada, yada, yada.
Don't forget the preterists.
Right. So there's all of these different theories. What we'll do is we'll give everybody 2 minutes to state exactly fact for fact why they are what they're – just kidding. We're not going to do that.
I forfeit my 2 minutes right now.
Forfeit your 2 minutes. I think one of the issues, and this is where the conversation can kind of be less hosted by me and more just part of discussion and conversation. One of the issues with getting so caught up in all of the how is that the study of end times was never supposed to help us figure out when or how. It's supposed to fill us with hope and transform the way that we live. And we only know that Jesus comes back and that he comes back the winner and that anyone who gets on his team gets to win too. So what are some cautions you would give to people about taking a study of end times too far and focusing too much on the how?
So focusing on the how and the when, I mean, really, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I think that if you go to our big old fun word, apocalyptic literature, that you remember who it was written to in the first place, mm-hmm. which are people who were enduring suffering. So you go to the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
It's a rough time. John's exiled on the island of Patmos. Probably Domitian is emperor at this time. And that guy is wicked.
That potentially even killed his brother to take the throne.
Yeah, probably on par with a Nero, I think would be fair to say. And so it is a, being a Christian can be a literal life and death decision that you are making. There is just a lot going on there. And so to the churches who are suffering, who are enduring, some are succeeding, some are failing, some are, you know, kind of in the middle between those two things. That's who the book of Revelation is written to. And it's reminding them that whenever, even as bleak as things get, you can still hold on to hope, because all of this, and I think the way that we phrased it earlier in the message was that when it looks like things are falling apart, they're actually falling in place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that through all of what you're experiencing, it's not falling apart, it's falling in place. It's a part of God's plan.
Yeah.
And so I think that whenever we become obsessed with how and when, we can forget that that's really the whole point of apocalyptic literature, eschatology talk.
Yeah, prophecy.
Prophecy.
All that.
Prophecy is meant to predict, and it's also meant to comfort or confront.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that we can just kind of, and too, just from a Bible study standpoint, is we can start to force texts to mean what they were never meant to mean.
Right. And that's, I think, some of the frustration that I would have with how people can maybe take, we'll use the book of Revelation, for example, and just rip it out of context. And then all of a sudden we're talking about Apache helicopters, mm-hmm. and we're talking about microchips, and to throw this word out there, even like vaccines and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, do we really think that God was trying to use John to deliver a message about all of that sort of stuff in that historical context to those real historical people?
Right. Yeah. So it was
probably not.
Probably not. But there is still the possibility for the future meaning. You know, you go back to Matthew 24. Is it talking about Jerusalem? Yes. Is it talking about the end of the world? Well, yeah, it is. And so sometimes that can take place. You know, you go to Isaiah 7 with the prediction of for the Messiah would be born of a virgin. Mm-hmm. You know, that is a doubly fulfilled prophecy, because it was literally, I think it was Isaiah's child, if I remember right, in Isaiah 7, 14. And it was his child. And, and what God is saying is before, by the time your either daughter or, no, it wasn't daughter. Anyway, by the time this child is born and before it can, you know, before, by the time it's weaned, this king will be in place or out of place. And then Matthew is able to look back at that and say, and this was also predicting the Messiah's coming.
Sure.
And so it is possible for text to mean those things, but we've got to be just very, very cautious, because a text, we just have to be really careful.
Right. And it goes back to the thing you brought up that Shane Wood is, guiding us in is like, are we asking the same questions that the text is actually asking?
Correct.
So if we approach the book of Revelation with what does the end of the world look like, then we may not actually be asking the same question that Revelation is asking.
Correct. Yeah, because the book of Revelation is probably asking the question of how do I endure this suffering until the end?
Right.
And why should I endure this suffering? How can I see that you're still in control? And so that I think that's probably more of the meaning of the book of Revelation, which you guys both know, our audience may not know. Martin Luther did not want the book of Revelation in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't want that one, and he didn't want James.
James, yeah.
James.
Because James emphasizes the works that flow from the grace.
Yeah, with Revelation, he was like, you can't call a book Revelation if it doesn't reveal anything. So,
yeah. At least he didn't say Revelations.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not
like
the
Walmart's, yeah. Revelations, yeah. Longhorns.
Longhorns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get back to the prophecy and taking scripture out of context sometimes, it just reminded me, you know, Sunday, Easter, we talked about the Psalm 22 prophecy. Mm-hmm. And when David wrote that, he was going through it. We don't actually know the exact, some of his Psalms, we know where he was. Like he says, in the cave,
right,
or running from his son Absalom. Yeah. But this one, it doesn't say where he is. It just says, to the tune of the doe in the morning. And he writes things like we talked about Sunday, like, my God, why have you forsaken me? Jesus quotes that on the cross. But then he writes things like, I'm a worm and not a man. Not literal. He is a man. Mm-hmm. But he feels like a worm. Or like later he says, many bulls surround me, or roaring lions tear at their prey. He wasn't literally being torn. And same thing when Jesus quotes that. He's feeling, I mean, there aren't literal bulls at the foot of the cross.
Sure.
But his flesh was torn, you know, and things like that. And so same thing with apocalyptic literature. There's imagery that is drastic to get across a point.
Yes.
You know, Ezekiel's on my mind too, because I just listened to that podcast, and Ezekiel uses some pretty, I mean, disturbing imagery to talk about the unfaithfulness that Israel has towards God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's to make a point. Your sin is so horrific, but God's grace is so good. And so same thing with apocalyptic, with prophetic literature. Sometimes it's metaphorical. And so we have to hold that in balance. And you know, Matthew was inspired, and he's in the biblical canon.
Yes.
None of us are in the biblical canon.
Correct.
Right? Meaning none of our writings make it into the Bible.
Yes.
So we have to be very, very, very careful.
That's the caution.
You know,
Matthew
can take Psalm 22 and apply it to Jesus because the Holy Spirit is inspiring him to write part of the Bible.
Yeah. Same thing with Isaiah 7. I mean, it's all those other things.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very good way to articulate that point.
Yeah. Love it. What are some, I don't know, I kind of have one little tidbit before wrapping up here, but obviously, we're going to get into some more conversations next week, maybe even more specific stuff next week, because the conversation takes a shift from this is what we know Jesus will return to the more nuanced question of will there be signs, and if so, what do they look like, and all that sort of stuff. But as we're wrapping kind of that part up today, what are maybe some other thoughts that you'd like to throw out there? Maybe it would be helpful to define some of the terms for our people, just different things like that. What are some things to say here?
Define the terms. Which terms are you thinking?
Well, just some of the terms like, what do we mean by millennial or seven-year tribulation, or just different things that are thrown out there?
Yeah. So in short form, the idea of the millennium comes from, Revelation 20, and probably Daniel 9, some Matthew 13, 28, 2 Peter 3, you know, those kind of things.
Right.
But it's a thousand-year reign. And so whenever you hear people, the thousand-year reign of Christ, okay? Mm-hmm. So whenever you hear somebody say premillennial, postmillennial, amillennial, what you're hearing them describe is, when do they believe the rapture will take place? Okay, is it before the millennial reign of Jesus? Is it after the millennial reign of Jesus? Is it all, meaning that there is no like literal thousand-year reign of Jesus? And so that's really what you're kind of getting down into, is defining that term of whenever you see the rapture taking place. And the rapture being when the saints are called up to Jesus, and those things. Anything you want to add there, Josh, on that, or Luke?
No, I think that's a helpful definition of the terms, for sure. And that's where, I think, again, that's our point, is that within each of those thought processes comes all sorts of different options and beliefs and all that sort of stuff. And sure, take the time to research and study and maybe come to a conclusion that you will hold loosely, because there's really no way to know. But then again, at the end of the day, be aware of some of the things that we've talked about and cautions on focusing too much on the how. So
this is something and some of the biblical numbers too mean things. So like 10 is a number. So 10 times 10 times 10 is 1,000. So maybe that means something as well.
Right.
It's like you have 144,000. Well, that's like 12 times 12.
Sure.
Times 10 times 10 times 10.
Yes.
You know, and 12 is a big biblical number as well for.
Yeah. So the 144,000 that you read about in Revelation is just God's way of saying anybody who's supposed to be in will be in.
Yeah.
Right.
Nobody will be lost.
Yeah. If you're the 144,000 in first, it doesn't mean you're out.
Yeah.
You know, you're okay.
So it's not a literal 144,000 as much as God is saying, hey, the complete number of people that I'm.
12 tribes, 12 disciples,
multiply
by each other. All the way to 1,000. So nobody.
And there's that number. And there's
similar, you know, similar to when Peter asks, how much do I have to forgive somebody? And Jesus says,
7 times 7.
Well, or 77, depending on which gospel you read. But the point is, Jesus isn't saying an exact number. He's saying a lot. Like, keep going, keep forgiving, because that's how you've been forgiven, right? So,
yeah. And numbers are an important thing to bring up to you, because and specifically the book of Revelation, you've got numbers like 666 and 777 and God's number versus the devil's number and the mark of the beast and all these things, which again, you know, can be things that, are we actually saying the same thing that the Bible is meaning whenever we're talking about these things? And so all of this to say, I think to summarize what we're saying is, proceed, but proceed with caution, because there really is only one thing that we know: Jesus comes back victoriously. And so, I think, fun stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Obviously, we'll throw this one in here, because again, I'm just really, no matter where I end up on the when and the how, whether it's, you know, a little bit different from traditional or anything like that, what we know is what we know. And I'm really passionate about the fact that as the Bible presents the study of end times, like, God reveals what he feels like we need to know in order to live well and honor him and have hope that he's coming back even in the midst of our suffering. And so obviously we look at our world, we would say that it's spinning out of control from our perspective, which is part of the reason that we may have decided to do this series. People are looking at the brokenness and they're longing for something better, wondering if it's coming soon. So here's a question that I have, just to kind of wrap up our conversation. What is a word of encouragement that you would give to our people in the midst of the hard times that we're currently facing? Because I think that's the question that end times makes us ask.
Yeah, I think that it would be more than a word of encouragement. It would be a question of encouragement, or a question to ponder, that in light of the fact that it could happen at any moment, what kind of life ought you live? And that, I think that's really the driver of all of this. So if the, and we'll talk more about this next week, but if the birth pains are increasing, if we're moving past Braxton Hicks contractions to actual labor contractions, what kind of lives ought we to live? And if the authors of Scripture, who have been pretty doggone accurate,
imagine that,
have said countless times he's coming back, then we can know that that's going to take place. And so what kind of lives ought we to live in light of that fact, now? And so that would be my question to ponder.
Yeah. And that's your bottom line and your challenge, really, is, are you ready? If you knew tomorrow was the day, how would you live today? Josh, would you have anything to agree with your own words, or to add to that question? What would be maybe a word or a question of encouragement you would give to our people in the midst of the hard times that they're facing?
Yeah, I think just I've summarized this before for like a CLC class or whatever, just revelation is Jesus wins. Like two words, Jesus wins. Mm-hmm. And really it's, he already won. We sang that song at Corinth quite a bit lately, just I'm fighting a battle that you've already won. Mm-hmm. So the picture of revelation about the great battle and all this stuff is not necessarily a future battle that Satan is going to have a showdown with Jesus. Like, he already has done that. Yeah. And Jesus already beat him on the cross.
Yeah. Great.
So hang on to that hope.
Yeah. And I would just add as well, and this doesn't change anything about pondering the way that we ought to live, but it is from our perspective that the world is spinning out of control, right? Like, we look at the brokenness and we're like, oh my goodness, it is getting so bad. But I would just remind you of the sovereignty of God, that from his perspective, it is under his careful control. Mm-hmm. And he does not pace the floors of heaven wondering what's going on. He knows exactly what he intends to do, and he will do it because he is faithful to do it. And so that changes. Are you ready for God to do what he promised he would do? And how's that going to impact the way that you live? So that's End Times, part one. It's the end of the world, question mark. Did we answer the question? Yes or no? No, we didn't, because we don't know when, but we know that it will happen. So good conversation. Let's wrap up with a little bit of fun today.
Real quick reminder, we have fun, is don't forget you can text the one word End Times to 94000 with, and then you'll get a prompt to ask any question that you want. And our goal is through the podcast and potentially, depending on how many words I have to cut in a sermon message, maybe be able to address some of these questions on Sunday morning as well. But so End Times, that's one word, okay? End Times, no space. And then to 94000, and then you'll get prompted to submit a question.
Yeah,
and
excellent.
We'll have
love
some fun
it. Do
with
it.
That.
That's awesome. And while we're doing the commercials, you know, like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Share with a few friends.
Leave a five-star review. If you're going to do a one-star, don't leave one.
Yeah, do it on all the platforms. So go to Spotify, 5 stars, and Apple Podcasts, 5 stars. Here's the game for today. We are talking It's the End of the World. The literature in the Bible that people often go to is the book of Revelation. And so we're going to play a game to see how well we know our text of Revelation, called Taylor Swift Lyric or Revelation Text. So
we're
going to throw one out, and you guys have to decide whether it's a,
I will only
it's a text
know one of
or, a song. So here's the first quote. But you walked away from your first love. Why? Taylor Swift.
That's Revelation.
That is Revelation, chapter 2, verse 4. Mm-hmm. It is the Message translation.
At Ephesus?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
You walked away from your
first
love.
Lost your first love.
Yep. Okay. Marked me like a bloodstain.
That's Taylor
Swift. I'm going to say Taylor,
That's Taylor Swift. Okay. Yep. They've gotten worse what they deserve.
They've gotten worse
than what they deserve?
Where did I get the word worse?
I don't know.
Yeah,
you're reading
some
it.
Dyslexia there, I guess. They've gotten what they deserve is the phrase.
Oh.
They've gotten what they deserve. Revelation.
I think that's Revelation.
It's Revelation, chapter 16, verse 6. I know all the things you do and that you have a reputation for being
Revelation.
That's Revelation chapter 3, verse 2. I was wondering if the word reputation was going to throw y'all off.
No.
But
I don't know any Taylor Swift songs.
Does she have a Reputation album or something?
Reputation album. Okay. You didn't even see the signs.
Ooh.
That's Taylor.
That's got to be Taylor.
It's Taylor.
Yeah.
Look at you guys go. I will give you the credit because I think you know this. The answers to these because you know your scripture better than you know
Revelation.
That's not Revelation
by default.
Because
I know many Christians who would only be able to recognize this because they know the Taylor Swift lyric more. So it was as sweet as honey in my mouth.
Oh, that's Revelation.
Taylor. Revelation chapter
is that?
10, verse 10.
He eats the scroll just like.
Oh, that's right.
Just like Ezekiel.
That's right.
Comes back to that again.
Dude, your Ezekiel kid's fun.
It was super fun.
Yeah.
Good.
I think next week's podcast, it should just be Josh explaining Gog and Magog then.
No.
There we go. All right. I know they said the end is near.
That's got to be Taylor.
I'm going to say Taylor.
It is Taylor Swift. Yes. A glass sea mixed with fire.
Revelation.
Revelation. Yeah.
Revelation 15:2. Hell was the journey, but it brought me to heaven.
Taylor.
Yeah.
That's too easy. I am queen on my throne.
Ooh, there is that.
There's like, the harlot.
I'm gonna say Taylor though.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree.
Revelation chapter 18 verse 7.
What translation?
It doesn't actually say this one, but
Queen on my throne.
Most of them have been the verifying in the message, which makes the game a little bit harder.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that'd be the harlot.
Queen on my throne. Yeah.
Yep. The happy voices of brides and grooms will never be heard in you again.
Ooh, that's Revelation.
Revelation
chapter 18 verse 23. I knew you'd come back to me.
Oh.
Taylor. My kingdom come undone.
Taylor.
It's Taylor. And that is the end of the game.
All right.
Well done there. You guys did a great job.
We did pretty well. We would have passed.
Great job. Yeah,
I missed one, so.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
It was.
Well, I missed two. So Josh won.
Okay.
He got me by one.
Okay, there you go. Cool. So let's start memorizing our Revelation scriptures. In the message translation so that we can differentiate between them and Taylor Swift. Hey, it's been a fun one. Don't forget to text in those questions, and don't forget to join us in person for It's the End of the World, part two, next week, and we'll see you back in the car for the podcast. We love you, and we like you. Peace and peace.
I hold no bad blood against Josh.
Good one.
Like Taylor. I knew you were trouble.